Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Bronco Monday. We'll discuss the most recent Boise State game and talk about the upcoming schedule. Now here are Paul J. Schneider, Chris Walton, and the voice of the Broncos, Bob Beeler, on 670 KBOI.
All right, top of the morning. It's Bronco Monday. Bob Beeler is here. Man, that was an exciting game. Boise State, another sellout against the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And we're talking down to the last hanging on the rim layup attempt. It was a hell of a game.
It really was. So if you've gone to the two sellouts, you've seen two games that have been decided by a total of five points.
The Broncos won them both.
and one of them went to overtime. The game had everything. I thought both teams played extremely well. I thought you saw a real high-level basketball game. I don't know that I want to see UNLV again in the conference tournament
home.
It just shows you how little room for error there is. I mean, right now, Boise State and Nevada are really assuming the top two, and there's becoming a gap. New Mexico, who Boise State will see tomorrow night, is now two games behind Boise State. But watching these teams play, even though Nevada and Boise State have been by far the most consistent teams, they're still not that much better than the other teams in the conference, in the middle of the conference,
right,
that they can, you know, just roll the ball out and win. But Boise State once again saw the team try to throw everything in the kitchen sink against Chandler Hutchison. He finished with 21, but I thought affected the game with his 8 assists. Mm-hmm. I think that they made it very difficult for him to get into the paint, to do anything, and he made other players better. And then the guy that I thought had the game that put him over the top was Justinian Jessup, who since, you know, he had a good game against Air Force, which I think was a good one for him to kind of get his touch back.
You said before the game, he'll be playing somebody who has a defense that will let him score.
Yes.
If he makes passes.
Against Air Force, we're talking about.
Right.
Then he kind of gets the rhythm back, and he ends up going 5-for-8 from three. And a three-point shot for UNLV was good in the first half, or pretty good in the first half, 4 out of 10. It's a team that doesn't shoot a lot of threes. But they made 1-for-9 in the second half, 1-for-3 in overtime. And the two guys that made it hadn't made a three-point shot in conference, and both had made just one each in the entire season. Those are their two big guys that you don't want outside by the three-point ring.
But they shot it well. They really shot it well.
And Boise State, best start continues since 88-89 overall, 98-99 for the conference start. And this week, I contend, maybe the hardest week of the season when you look at both games in the same calendar week. You've got to go to New Mexico. Teams leaving later this afternoon, and then they'll be coming back after the game and then heading on a bus to Utah State Friday for the game on Saturday. Two teams that both are considerably better at home. New Mexico, when they were here, I thought was a very bad basketball team, especially by New Mexico standards. But they are 5-0 at the Pit, so they're kind of like Jekyll and Hyde. They play very well at home.
Yeah, and they've beaten Vegas. They've beaten
San Diego State.
They've beaten all the tough teams at home so far.
And then Nevada does not visit the Pit this year. That's the team they miss on the road.
How good, in your opinion, is Brandon McCoy? And also, how many years will he be in college?
This is your only chance to see him. He's going to be gone. Seven-footers, you can't coach size. Bob Myers, the general manager of the Warriors, was at courtside for the game. And Abe made a great point that, you know, he's here in person to look at Chandler, and he's here in person to look at McCoy, because those are the kind of guys that are going to be left when the Warriors pick. Maybe they'll both be gone, but you have a chance that they might be in the mix. Mm-hmm. Or maybe if you really like one of them, you might be able to trade up 6 or 8 picks to maybe 20 or whatever and get one of those guys. Totally different players. McCoy is going to be an inside guy, a little bit raw. Chandler, more polished, more of a wing player, somebody that'll help you out on the perimeter. So, I think you saw the two NBA pro prospects go at it on Saturday, and I think they're both good.
Yeah, somebody asked me, who would you draft?
I think it depends on who you are.
Exactly. It's what you need would depend on which of those two you would pick.
Mm-hmm.
KBOI News Time, 8:43.
Now, back to Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
And we're back, Bob Beeler along with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider. And before the end of the game, this game was so much like the previous meeting at UNLV. UNLV had a slim lead at the half, and then fairly early on in the second half, Boise State had a big run. They had a 14-0 run that turned a 4-point UNLV lead into a 12-point lead for Boise State that really proved to be the difference, what carried through and why Boise State was able to even get it to overtime and then win the game. And Coach Rice talked about what the team was able to do in that 3 or 4 minute stretch where they were pretty much unstoppable.
Well, we got some great stops, and then we got rolling downhill a little bit. And then, you know, I didn't want to sub. I was in that gray area of let them go. But there was 10 minutes to go, and we hadn't subbed very much, and I didn't want our guys to run out of gas, but I didn't want to sub them out of that thing. So, you know, I threw a few guys in there and may have subbed us out, which I hate to do. But, you know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't on that one a little bit. And, you know, I've trusted – when we've subbed, we've gotten better, usually because we've got fresh guys doing their job, and, you know, that's just a feel thing. But credit our guys. They just kept, you know, I think they were disappointed we didn't win in regulation, but and they, you know, they had a little bit look of that in their eyes at the end of regulation, like, dang it, we should have got them, and, but they bounced back and, you know, did a great job in overtime.
One thing I really like about Coach Rice is he's a very much of a feel coach, and you watch him and you'll look out there and you'll say, wow, he's got these five guys together. I can't believe it. But if things are going well, he doesn't upset the apple cart. Another thing that I think hurt in that 14-0 run, they got a media timeout. And I think sometimes when you get a timeout, it stops the momentum, and that was unfortunate as well. But 14-0 run, I thought that team in that stretch of about 3 or 4 minutes was just unbelievable.
Yeah, it was impressive, and they made, what, 5 out of 6 three-pointers.
Right, and that was leads us to the next question from the postgame show with Coach Rice. What did the team do in the second half from three? Because they were unbelievable, 7 out of 14.
Well, I think, you know, we're a team that just kind of grinds you and grinds you and grinds you by keep coming at you. And, you know, those numbers usually, like you said, our free throw number ends up where it's supposed to be at the end of the game. And usually our shooting numbers come close if we're getting good shots. And, you know, I think we just kept moving the ball around and we got some good shots.
And Boise State able to get it done. And this question may kind of seem kind of basic, but looking at the way Boise State has played, and especially has played in close games, the only close game this year they have not won was the Wyoming game. I guess you could say the Nevada game was fairly close, but one that, you know, comes right down to the last possession. They have been unbelievable. Ask him why they were able to get it done against UNLV.
Well, you know, just the toughness of this team to be able to play, you know, fight through stuff and things not go their way maybe, and the perfect calls, the perfect free throws, all those things, and they just keep sawing wood and find a way to get it done. And, you know, the formula might be a little different some nights, and you know, different guys make different plays. And tonight, you know, I think they just hung together as a team and got it done.
And one of the things that I don't like about college basketball, maybe this is a guy talking from 32 years at small or mid-majors, Bucknell to UMass to Boise State. Nevada and Boise State will look themselves in the mirror at the end of the year and say, we have had wonderful seasons. But unfortunately, they could get squeezed out of an at-large bid by somebody in a Power 5 conference that might be 500 in the conference. One of the rules I'd like to see in is if you don't go at least 500 in your conference, you can win to get into the tournament by winning your tournament, but you should not be able to get an at-large, because if you're not 500 in your conference, there's no way you can look in the mirror and say we had a good season.
I agree. And Dick Vitale over the weekend was 8 wins. They get 8 wins in conference. They go 8-10 in conference. They come on. And he's talking about the Big 12.
Yeah.
Stop
mm-hmm.
it. If you're 8-10 in your conference, have fun in the NIT.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And you just look at the way Boise State and Nevada have played. They together now are 18-3.
Yeah, throw St. Mary's in there.
Right.
And, you know, you get teams like that. If St. Mary's happens to lose to BYU or somebody, mm-hmm. you know, they'll have trouble getting in. That's not fair. Not fair.
That's why rankings are so odd anyway.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. It's Bronco Monday. It's 8:50.
Now, back to Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back. KBOI News Time, 8:53. Busy week for you. Starts tomorrow.
Yes, it does. So everybody remember this week, Boise State basketball plays on Tuesday, not Wednesday. 7:30 pregame, 8 o'clock tip from the Pit. Boise State looking to be the first team to win at the Pit in Mountain West Conference play this season. Utah State will be the opposition on Saturday. We'll go down there for a night game. That'll be a 6:30 start right here on 670 KBOI. And then we have the coaches show sandwiched in between at 6 o'clock on Thursday. And then at 5 o'clock on Wednesday, moving back, we have our signing day show. Most of the class, obviously, was put together before Christmas, but we'll talk with the coaches 5 to 7 right here on 670 KBY about Boise State's football recruiting class.
Yeah, and they'll be, what, half dozen maybe?
Yeah, I was going to say 5 or 6. Of course, Riley Smith, the quarterback that, you know, appears to have committed out of Florida, and there'll be probably 4 or 5 others. But, again, it's just filling out the class because I believe they got 19 or 20 back in December.
Yeah, so a little bit of football sprinkled in with, man, it's been a great basketball season. Mm. And Chris and I were talking off the air before you came in about Boise State probably would not have won the game against UNLV last year.
There's just something about this mix this year. It's a better, and I can't put my finger on it as to why. I think Chandler's better. I think the three sophomores plus Haney are all better. I think the two grad transfers have really picked up nicely. I mean, you lose some good players in Reed, Duncan, and then, of course, Paris Austin transfers, and you bring some guys in, basically, that are seniors. If those two had been freshmen that have been taking those minutes that Williams and Sengfelder take, they're not 19-4.
Well, and it's experience and chemistry, but they get into those clutch moments, and things go well this year.
In the end of the game,
Lexus,
you expect them to win. You expect them to win when they're down the stretch. You expect this team to make a play to find a way to get it done.
And they expect to do that.
And I think it's one of the reasons why they're doing it, because they have the confidence to get it done. And it doesn't have to be Chandler.
Yeah,
it can be, and it a lot of times will be, but it doesn't have to be. And I think that's another reason why, if they decide to double-team Chandler, you know, Williams, Jessup, Sengfelder, there's another way they can get it done.
Yeah, and I like this team quite a bit. They're a big man away from being really formidable.
The big man we saw from UNLV. How many centers? McCoy, in my opinion, is the only real true center that starts in this conference.
He is.
He
is.
And just shows you how few there are out in college basketball.
Yeah, he's a dandy. And he almost beats us with a 3.
And like Bob said, see him this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll be gone. No question about that. All right, Bobby, thank you. And we'll see you tomorrow night from the pit, Albuquerque, New Mexico. And best luck to the Broncos on the road both games this week. It's 8:56, time for a news break. We'll follow that up with Idaho Talks Live.
You're talking about it.
They don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
We were considering buying like one Bitcoin, but we decided not to because we were going to have to find like 79 other people to go in on it with us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we decided eventually that would be kind of ridiculous.
It just seems so chancy, and there's nothing behind it. And people there's no gold behind the dollar.
The people who bought them when they were next to nothing and hung on to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a weird thing anyway. The value of Bitcoin is essentially whatever people decide it is to a certain extent.
That's basically right.
Yeah.
And really?
Sort of. It's the
did
weirdest.
You decide it's...
Every place I've ever looked up an explanation, I mean, I've looked all over the internet for an explanation of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And nobody explains it the same way twice. And also nobody explains it in a way that you can really figure out what it is. It's a really mysterious type of thing. But, I mean, there's a...
Well, you get the feeling there's like 3 guys controlling it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, I'll trade you this for something worth $3,000. So now it's worth $3,000.
Yeah. Here's my Bitcoin. Great Super Bowl, I thought.
Yeah.
It was a really good game.
Quite a good game.
Uh-huh. Start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
And then Philadelphia We read stories all last week about how they're greasing light poles and doing all this stuff, getting ready in case they won.
They even did it for the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In case they won.
Because they didn't want people climbing up light poles and, you know, being drunk idiots.
What is it?
Or even just regular idiots.
What is it that prompts people in what should be a joyous moment to go destroy the downtown of their city?
I would say
I don't get it.
I would say it's a moment of sort of a tribal kind of just exhilaration or just ecstasy. You know, because people get tribal.
Oh, crap.
You know, people get very tribal. Like when all of a sudden, like everybody's rooting for the Eagles and they're all there at the stadium and everything is going their way. Some people don't do it. I mean, you've been to 7 billion games in your life, so you probably aren't going to do that. But there are people like when, a big game, like for instance, Boise State at the first time we were at the Fiesta Bowl. I mean, it felt like that. All of a sudden, you felt like you had this kinship with everybody, but fortunately, not everybody was vandalizing things. But maybe in Philadelphia, a little different.
Boisterous fans smashed a Macy's store window.
Yeah.
Looters broke into convenience stores. Other revelers flipped over a car.
Yeah, we saw that on TV.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Todd?
I think it's liquid courage, alcohol.
Well, yeah, alcohol fuels the whole thing, but people get very tribal. I mean, there are people who they like to belong to something, and this is why more people show up to see a winning team. It's not just because they say, oh, this is going to be better, you know, football, better basketball. It's because they want to be there and be part of that feeling when it wins. They want to be with everybody else.
Three people fell from the ground from light poles.
Yeah.
And lost consciousness.
So they must have been really good climbers.
Yeah, while other fans were seen in an online video leaping off a hotel entrance awning.
Mm-hmm.
At least one car was set afire. Video posted to social media showed the awning. I don't know why I'm laughing.
Yeah.
Showed the awning outside the Ritz-Carlton Hotel collapsing because there were a dozen people on it, and it's canvas.
Yeah, that's idiotic. Robin Williams had this story years ago where he said he had been like on Mork and Mindy and stuff, and he was moderately famous at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't a huge movie star or anything yet, but he lived in San Francisco. And he did not watch sports. He was not a sports fan of any kind. I mean, mm-hmm. He was a guy that, you know, grew up doing theater and stuff like that. But he was driving in San Francisco one day. Turned out it was in January.
Mm-hmm.
And he said all of a sudden there was this mob of people running down the street. And a guy threw a lit flare at his car. And then the guy was standing there and he rolled down his window and he says, what are you doing? And the guy went, Niners. And Robin Williams said, at this point, I decided apparently there was some sort of sporting contest that had gone well. And it's so that it, you know, made the guys decide they'd burn things down and vandalize stuff and throw a flare at my car.
Rowdy fans in Philly yesterday could also be seen looting.
Yeah.
Trashing a Sunoco gas station with people running around carrying stuff, yelling, everything is free. In another vile moment of celebration, an Eagles fan could be seen eating horse manure off a street as a crowd of people gathered around him to cheer him on.
As a Redskins fan, somehow.
And film it on their phones.
That probably doesn't bother me as much as it should.
And they have video of it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, congratulations on your Super Bowl win, morons.
Television footage and posts on social media showed Philadelphia erupting in joy with all of this destruction after the Eagles captured their first Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Since 1960.
Drunken joy.
Which wasn't the Super Bowl then.
That's true. It was the NFL championship.
Mm-hmm. Bednarik.
Yeah, Chuck Bednarik. Right. I'm trying to think of anybody else that was on that team.
Young kids on Broad Street with parents weaving strollers between cars and people, holding infants and characters.
Yeah.
Drunken people were all over the place. I mean, you won the game. Don't be an idiot.
Well, and see, the thing is, winning you know, it's like they say sports doesn't actually build character, it reveals character.
Yeah.
And I think being a fan of a winning team is the same way. It doesn't turn you into an idiot. It just reveals the fact that you are one.
Unbelievable.
Like, hey, something exciting is going on. Let's loot.
Yeah. The mayor said, I urge everyone to celebrate in a way that's safe and respectful. Well, that didn't work.
No, not at all. Well, actually, you know, based on the percentage of people who weren't looting, maybe the, you know.
Maybe it did.
Maybe the message got through to some. So I guess it was worth saying. It's like, you know, when the kids leave the house and you say, be careful. Every time.
I don't get it. I just don't get it. I guess I'm old.
Well, no. You were never, how do I put this, a complete moron. That sounds like I'm saying you were at least partially one. No. Okay. At least when you weren't looking for your keys. Okay, but.
Yeah. True.
That's an old story. Anyway. But, no, I mean, you don't go and celebrate things by destroying stuff. That's not your deal.
No. All right. Well,
I mean,
congratulations to Philadelphia.
I mean, apart from fireworks. You've destroyed a lot of fireworks, but that's what they're designed for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did do that.
That's true.
On many occasions.
Exactly. You like fireworks.
Yeah, I do.
But they're fun. That's why you like them.
And
they're designed to be for celebrations.
Yeah. All right. It's
breaking windows is not.
And stealing stuff.
Right.
You're stealing stuff.
Yeah.
It's against the law.
No, it's not. Everything's free.
Yeah, some guy said everything was free, and you believed him.
Mm-hmm.
Some
guy said. That'll hold up in court.
9:15.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time, 9:19. Let's go to the phones and John. John, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, one of the things I don't know if I missed or not, how many arrests were made?
I don't know if I had a number.
Were any arrests made? I haven't heard anybody say anything about arrests being made.
Well, they set cars on fire and stuff, I would assume.
You assume, but doesn't mean they did. I mean, I would think those businesses and people that lost stuff would sue the mayor. He's responsible for law and order.
Or just sue the city in some way, yeah.
Yes, because they allowed that to happen. Obviously, they didn't have enough force out there.
Here's the deal. Officials have not yet announced how many arrests were made or how many injuries were reported, so... Mm-hmm. We don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, I might be corrected, but it just seems like it got way out of control.
Oh, yeah. And the thing that gets me is they knew it would.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. They didn't have an adequate force.
Well, how do you stop it? How do you stop the entire population of the city? Machine guns?
Well,
no, I don't think so.
Not the whole population. You prevent when it gets started. It's usually a group. It starts it. I mean, it only takes one person to cause a riot.
Well, that's true, and they had 100,000.
Yeah, they had a lot. But, you know, when they have tens of thousands at a lot of these rallies or whatever, the only time they get out of hand is when the police stand back and watch.
Now, well, what would you recommend the police do, shoot people?
No. Why would they, not unless you have to. No, they've been able to control crowds for a long time, using horses, motorcycles, whatever.
Fire hoses.
Not in New York they do. They use horses a lot.
Hmm.
And they're good crowd control when they want to. I just feel, from what I've listened to, that they did not put an adequate force out there.
No, maybe not. I mean, it's hard for us to judge because we're not Philly policemen, but, you know, the fact that some things happened would indicate that apparently, you know, there weren't 16 cops on every block. But I really don't know how you can predict everything.
16 cops isn't going to stop 5,000 people.
I think if you had two cops out there yelling, you have to pay for it, everybody would have paid, and everybody would have went home and had a good time, right?
I don't know. I'm not sure it's that easy.
No, I don't think it is.
No, but you said the one guy was saying it's everything's free, and people were running, breaking into things.
Well, yeah, drunk people, well, yeah.
Drunk
people tend to be somewhat more suggestible than non-drunk people.
Right. Anyway, you have a good one.
Okay, you too.
Thanks, John.
H.G. of McCall said the riot attitude spoils the victory for the hardworking players and coaches of the Eagles. I wouldn't want them as fans. And it doesn't happen in every city, but it does.
No, look when the Cubs won the World Series. They won that
stuff. Chicago didn't riot.
No. Amazing.
Part of the reason I think it is that is, you know, it's like we said, it had been 68 years since the Eagles, that particular team. Now, Philadelphia had won other championships. Mm-hmm. The Phillies have won a couple of times, and the 76ers have won a couple of times. And, well, in Philadelphia Flyers also in hockey, but the Eagles hadn't won for 68 years.
Well, it's just like the Cubs, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the White Sox had won, the Bulls had won. Blackhawks had won.
Mm-hmm. The Bears.
Yeah. Pro-life, you're on.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking that if a team, say before the Super Bowl, before they left, you know, if the Philadelphia Eagle team and some of their staff, you know, put on their uniforms and they would go right into the neighborhoods and the areas where the people lived that were that they knew were going to get out of hand and go personally and talk to them and ask them, you know, give them an Eagles hat or something and say, will you promise me you won't vandalize and destroy stuff? It might do some good. I don't know. It's interesting. I've never heard of a team doing that, but I think we could call, you know, the team headquarters and stuff and say that kind of thing to them. Cause
I'm not entirely sure they know ahead of time who's going to be doing it.
No, they know the parts of town. They know the kind of people that are going to do that.
But you look at pictures of these people. I'm looking at, like, in this one picture, there's like 10 really attractive young women. And they are, like, frothing at the mouth, running out into the street.
Well, maybe the team name needs to get on the radio, the television, and just generally get the whole population to say, will you swear an oath to us? You won't get wild.
You know, and the team doing that, the mayor tried to do that.
Yeah,
and some, like we said,
police tried to do it.
We assume some people listened and other people didn't. The team doing that would be interesting as well.
Yeah, I'd like to see it happen. Well, hey, that's all I got.
Oh, okay, you bet.
Thanks.
All right. You know, thanks for the call. But you probably come off, if you start, you know, doing too much of that ahead of time, you probably come off poorly if you lose.
It might take it as suggestions, too.
Like,
I never thought of that.
We decided not to risk a rowdy celebration, so we lost the game.
No.
Nobody rioted in, I'll get Nate for this. Nate will get on me for this again. Nobody rioted in Cleveland. You know, they went 0-16. So anyway.
Yeah, they did. KBOI News Time, 9:26.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. More local talk with Nate Shellman is live this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back once again, 9:36. A little bit of controversy over the use of Martin Luther King's voice.
Mm-hmm. During the commercials. One of the big things about the Super Bowl is the commercials are extremely expensive. They figured it was $5 million this mm-hmm. year for a 30-second commercial. So some companies, you know, put a great deal of money into it, and they produce really noticeable commercials, and they you know, want to get as much attention as they possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Ram, you know, formerly Dodge Trucks, it's now just called Ram.
Mm-hmm.
A Ram truck ad that, and it was just on the news, we heard about it, a Ram truck ad that used a speech by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is drawing a backlash from people.
Yep.
And I didn't even think about this. I saw this ad, and I remember thinking, oh, that's very, you know, inspirational, where he says the greatest people among you are the ones who serve. you know, the ones who help the most.
Yeah.
Or should be, you know, known as the greatest people on earth. And I thought, yeah, that is a good message. But it says the ad shows people doing service-oriented tasks set against audio of Martin Luther King's speech, which urges people to be great by serving the greater good rather than just being successful. In other words, we're not going to judge you by how much money you have, but on how, you know, how good you are to humanity and whatnot.
Correct.
It was supposed to highlight the volunteer program Ram Nation, which is sponsored by Ram Trucks. But it was criticized by viewers and ad experts alike for forging too tenuous a connection with the civil rights hero. On Twitter, most people expressed the idea that using King's speech to sell trucks crossed a line between a heartfelt message and exploiting emotions just to push a vehicle. They pushed it over the edge, according to Kelly O'Keefe, a professor at Virginia Commonwealth, the brand center there, said you wanted to root for it because the cause is good, but it just didn't end up fitting the brand. So you ended up feeling a little bit manipulated. Now, earlier in the broadcast, there were ads for Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know they were for Toyota until the very last second because they didn't have anything to do with driving or Toyotas. It was just showing people doing kind of exhilarating things and then also showing the people that won Paralympic medals and stuff like that.
Right.
And just things that are kind of inspirational. And then at the very end, it said Toyota. And I wondered what, you know, one had to do with the other. But I couldn't even have told you that this ad was for Ram trucks because I just remember the imagery. And I remember thinking about what Martin Luther King was saying.
I also saw those MLK ads. And was not offended.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't put it together.
I didn't put it together that they were using
them to sell trucks.
They were using him to sell trucks.
Now, I thought they were using them to inspire the viewer.
Several years ago, they started using, and you have to license people's images and whatnot to do this. And so you have to get permission. And it was actually Priscilla Presley on behalf of Lisa Marie Presley that got that going in the late 70s. Where you can't use a dead celebrity's image and stuff without the permission of whoever is in control of their estate, like their family. And so Priscilla Presley ended up making Lisa Marie Presley extremely rich because people had to license Elvis's image to use it on anything through Lisa Marie Presley.
Mm-hmm.
And through the, I think they called it the, what's the name of his house? The, Graceland. Yeah, they call it the Graceland Foundation. Sorry, I couldn't think of that for some reason. Even though you got me a great nightlight from there. You did. He went to Graceland one time.
It's the most disappointing thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it's always smaller than people think it's going to be.
It's just a house.
But
like a 3,500-square-foot house.
But I think I said I made some joke about, you know, bring me a souvenir, and so you actually brought me a nightlight with Elvis on it. I thought that was just hilarious. So it was fun.
Yeah.
anyway, but they started using like John Wayne in ads and Marilyn Monroe and different things. And, mm-hmm. you know, because you can do so much more with computers now.
Sure.
And they used them to start selling. And people didn't like that. People said, you know, John Wayne wouldn't have sold that. John Wayne wouldn't have done that, you know, whatever. They don't know that for a fact. Mm-hmm. But people were kind of offended by that. And chances are Martin Luther King wouldn't have sold trucks. I don't know. Tim Calkins, a marketing professor at Northwestern, said the use of MLK to promote Ram trucks strikes many people as crass and inappropriate. Watching at home, some viewers expressed distaste for the ad as well. Again, in this particular ad, it said it was supposed to highlight the volunteer program Ram Nation.
Which is
now,
the message I got.
To be fair, Ram Nation, and this is what, you know, if you have a TV station or a radio station sponsoring something or a newspaper, mm-hmm. essentially you sponsor something to get your name as a sponsor. And, you know,
sure.
It's part of advertising, but you also do it to help in some way. Like if you are a TV station and you are sponsoring the run for breast cancer.
Sure.
You know, yes, your name is getting out there and people think you're very nice for doing that, but also you're helping at the same time. So mm-hmm. everybody gets kind of a benefit out of it. And this has been common forever. So what Ram was doing there, they were trying to advertise the Ram Nation, which is a volunteer program.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it's a great idea. However, people saw it as, oh, my God, they're using Martin Luther King to sell Ram trucks. What's the deal with that?
I was kind of stupefied by the time I saw that ad. My wife likes to watch all the lead-in stuff.
Yeah.
And
so you guys turn on the TV at noon?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank God for the Puppy Bowl, which we watched part of.
Oh, I missed that again.
Yeah, it's funny. But...
well, you know, in Super Bowl ads...
I just wasn't as insulted as maybe I should have been.
I stopped in the middle of a point earlier when I was talking about how they spend, you know, $5 million for a 30-second ad.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these corporations don't just say, hey, grab an ad and throw it on the air. They don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
There are endless discussions and test after test with focus groups, some of which are extremely racially diverse. And did nobody in those screening rooms ever speak
up? Hey, wait a minute.
Did no one ever say, you know, here we are in Black History Month, and if you're using Dr. Martin Luther King to sell Ram trucks, is somebody at Ram or the ad agency getting fired? But again, as you and I both did, I think people more or less saw it as they were sponsoring the Ram Nation volunteer program.
Mm-hmm.
And he was...
And volunteering is good.
Well, exactly. And he was talking about serving other people, volunteering, you know, doing what you can for the good of humanity, for the good of other people, and not just measuring yourself by how much money you've made for yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. People get upset.
On the other hand, I can't necessarily speak for it.
No.
Because, you know, Martin Luther King means different things to different people, obviously.
Sure. I don't know. I guess I didn't pay as much attention to the commercials this year. I don't even remember any.
I remember some of the movies.
Yeah, you said you liked the trailers and stuff.
Yeah.
Solo, that was pretty good.
Yeah, the one that's going to be the mm-hmm. latest a Star Wars saga, you know, not part of the Star Wars 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and all that, but it'll be... What was the name of that one movie? It was out a few years ago that was a Star Wars story, but it was the stuff that was going on at the same time that the regular Star Wars movie happened. It was, you know, I don't know.
This is a Star Wars. It's not about Hope Solo?
No, it's not about Hope Solo.
Oh.
So it's not about any soccer players whatsoever.
I missed it, I guess.
It'll be about Han Solo. Yeah.
The only soccer player we saw was
There will be no hope.
The
only,
tight end for...
Only Han.
The wife of the tight end for Philadelphia.
Is Eckert's.
Eckert's wife, who is easy to look at and is a hell of a soccer player.
Oh, yeah. Actually, they talk about those two.
Showed her making a goal.
That's one of those deals where they have children and there's some college that wants to sign the kids when they're three.
Yeah.
You know, like when Andre Agassi and Steffi Graf had a baby.
Mm-hmm. Chris Childs and Carlo Jacoby.
That sort of thing, yes,
mm-hmm.
exactly. Yeah. On a more local level.
Mm-hmm. KBOI News Time, 9:46.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 3, listen to Nate on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time, 9:50 on Super Bowl Hangover Monday.
Supposedly 14 million people nationwide will call in sick today who are only sick because of the Super Bowl or Super Bowl parties, etc.
And don't buy anything made in Philadelphia today.
Not even cream cheese?
No. Don't buy anything.
Not even a Philly cheesesteak sandwich? Everything has cheese in it when I talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Very cheesy. Dave of Boise... talking about the fans, said, to me, it points out the mentality of the football fans. After all, this is a game and nothing more. To have an outcome like the ones that always happen is just nonsense. For some reason, football has been associated with some sort of alcohol-free pass to do what you want and act like as big a fool as you wish with little or no consequences. It's not a victimless crime and should not be allowed to happen.
Exactly. I guess you could say
it's the middle class outlet. And I think that's one thing that when Pro-Life was talking about going into these neighborhoods, you know, and telling people, you know, don't do this sort of thing, it's generally the people who, after a big win like this, who cause a lot of trouble, generally are middle class type people.
No question.
You know, it's not poor people.
No, let's go to Steve of Boise. Steve.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, Steve.
You know, you'll probably enjoy this story. This is a Cinderella story, that game yesterday. It's also a story of David and Goliath. There's this guy from Boise, a guy named Jay, and there was a guy from Oregon who punched a guy from Boise. And they went to Philly, the city of brotherly love, found a guy named Nick who gave glory to God above. And they sang America the Beautiful and beat Goliath Gronkowski for the win.
Nice.
You know, it just kind of puts it all in perspective. It's a game.
Yeah, I like that.
I'll tell you, it was a great game, though. I mean,
no question.
It captured both sides' interest right up till the end.
Yeah.
And I just knew that giant sitting in the end zone would come down with that ball, but they didn't let him, did they?
No, they didn't.
And
it was close.
I just knew that that passer for the Patriots was going to throw that ball. And then here comes the defense and knocks the ball loose right at the end of the game. And they
awesome.
Still got it back and had another chance. But I'll tell you, that played out right to the very end.
Indeed.
Yeah, I would not have been overly shocked had Gronkowski caught that and they made the two-point conversion just like last year.
Exactly. You know, and that's what makes the game exciting.
Yep.
And I don't know, the excitement in Philly, though, I don't think that's excitement.
No, that's just...
But I do like that. I do like that when the last play of the game, you know, with like 4 seconds left, you know that still there could be an outcome of either team winning.
Yep. Yeah.
That's great. Yep.
You know, when it's 31-0 with 4 seconds left, you know, they don't even bother to run a play.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Steve. We got to move on. We got one more call. Let's go to Jim. Jim.
Morning. I consider myself somewhat of a connoisseur of commercials, and I'll swear that a lot of the better commercials have nothing to do with the Super Bowl. You know, a commercial that has good music or good comedy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you guys seem to have some knowledge of the effectiveness of at least one commercial, maybe more. And through full disclosure, I happen to have some shares of Wendy's. Now, Wendy's came out and attacked McDonald's.
They did.
So I just wondered how effective that was.
You know, I think it has an effect on some people. I paid attention to it.
I was looking at a little bit of it on maybe YouTube or something Friday, you know. And there was some feedback, you know. I mean, some of these McDonaldites, you know, were getting pissed off, you know. I mean, up in arms because they're putting down their favorite arches or whatever. Anyway, I thought it was a risky move on their part.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of these things, you sit there and you say, they're paying $5 million for that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and you wonder about the company's, fiscal intelligence.
Well, and thanks for the call, but there are some people who think that's a mistake. Like, for instance, years ago, Pepsi made a commercial where about 40 seconds of the 60-second commercial, they kept showing the Coke logo. And Coke at the time was the market leader in sodas. And they said that's a mistake to keep showing the Coke logo because, you know, at the end of it, it was a commercial for Pepsi, but all people can remember is how much they saw Coke.
Yeah, true stuff. 9:55, we are out of time. Thanks, everyone who called in today. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Idaho Talks Live.